a Christian perspective on the war in Ukraine. Now we are at the 6 month mark, 6 months of war in Ukraine. What are the lessons we can learn from this most tragic and unnecessary conflict? Well, first of all, Russia and Ukraine have the largest numbers of Christians in Europe. When we had Patrick Johnson of Operation World here a few years ago, he asked me, Peter, where will you find the largest number of born-again, Bible-believing, evangelical Christians in Europe? Not percentage number. I got it wrong. It was Russia. Second largest number, Ukraine. Third largest, Romania. It is tragic that millions of Christians are pitted against one another and are suffering as a result of this conflict. Russians, Ukrainians, many cases read the same Bible. And yet, sadly, while there's chaplains on both sides, they have been maneuvered, tricked into a war against one another. The Russian army no longer has commissars, they have chaplains. Secondly, from missionary friends working in Ukraine and Russia, we know that much of the narrative in the mainstream, lamestream media is shallow, superficial, lacking historic context, misleading, and frankly dishonest. From my travels and ministry throughout Eastern Europe with Reverend Bill Batten, and I've traveled more with Bill Batten than anyone else in the field, and we've ministered in 27 countries together. There was lots I could learn from Bill Batten and from the Christians that we ministered amongst in Eastern Europe, such as what the Ukrainians suffered under communism, particularly under the brutal dictatorship of Joseph Stalin. Up to 11 million Ukrainians died in the massacres and the resultant man-made starvation between 1929 and 1936. This came to be called the Holodomor, also known as the Great Famine and the Ukrainian Genocide of 1932 to 1933. The word Holodomor, literally translated from Ukraine, means death by hunger, or hunger plague, to kill by hunger, or to starve to death. Holodomor is a compound of the Ukrainian words holod, meaning hunger, and mor, meaning plague. So it's a hunger plague. This is one of the monuments to the victims of a Holodomor in Ukraine. In 2017, a film, Bitter Harvest, dramatized the horrors of the Soviet Holodomor in Ukraine, a generally very good, well-made film, which actually was remarkable for its positive spirit of resistance. It wasn't just a catalogue of the horrors of the enemy. There was a lot of resistance, and it was inspiring. From the Ukrainians themselves, I learned how they had been betrayed on numerous occasions by the British and American governments. I had sitting across the table with them and said, "You betrayed us." And I said, "What do you mean I betrayed you?" "Well, you're British and Americans. You're allies. You betrayed us. How did we betray you?" Well, first of all, by the Versailles Treaty, which betrayed them into the hands of the Soviet Union at the end of the First World War. Ukraine was freed by Germany in 1917. And this independence was recognized by Vladimir Lenin's Soviet Union in the Brest-Litovsk Treaty of March 1918, which also recognized the independence of Finland, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, all the way through to Georgia. All these were guaranteed by the Brest-Litovsk Treaty, which roughly resembles the borders of Europe, Eastern Europe today. So Brest-Litovsk was a lot better treaty than Versailles, evidently. Ukraine was also betrayed during the Second World War and after the Second World War as well, when vast quantities of military aid from America, Canada, and Britain rescued Stalin's brutal communist regime with what they called the arsenal of democracy. Well, it was going to have the worst dictatorship on the planet. Like these American planes, all with the red star on them, they provided tens of thousands of tanks, tens of thousands of fighter and bomber aircraft, billions of dollars of weapons, just beyond comprehension. As our friends in Eastern Europe pointed out to us, without the extravagant support of the United States of America, the United Kingdom, and Canada, Stalin's Soviet Union would not have survived 1941's Operation Barbarossa. Even before America entered World War II, officially, vast quantities of military hardware being flown, shipped, trucked into Russia via Alaska, Persia, and Murmansk. In fact, Britain invaded Iran to create a southern, which was a neutral country, to create a southern route through which aid could be channeled to Russia. About 50% of aid came from there. And they flew from Alaska into Russia, and they sent by ships via Iceland and to Murmansk over the top. And they invaded neutral Iceland to provide a base for saving the Soviet Union as well. 2 Chronicles 19, verse 2 says, "Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you." If you want one reason for, and there's many reasons, why the West has been under the curse of God for so long, it's how they betrayed hundreds of millions of Christians in Eastern Europe in the Second World War. In the Yalta Agreement, FDR and Churchill betrayed not only the people of Ukraine, but over 3 million Russian, Ukrainian, and other East European refugees living in Western Europe who were forcibly repatriated to Stalin's Soviet Union. This Operation Keelhaul, which was kept secret for over 3 decades, one of the first books I read that opened up to me the whole line of lies that had been told about the Second World War. I was 15 years old and I got hold of a book, 1975, on the last betrayal. It was so treacherous that even hundreds of thousands of Russian and Ukrainian children who had been born in Western Europe, who had never been in the Soviet Union, who had been brought up in freedom in the West, were forced at gunpoint and at bayonet point into the hands of the Soviet NKVD. They not only took Russians and Ukrainians who had fought for Germany and shipped them over, they shipped their wives and children, and Russians and Ukrainians who had fought for the Allies were also rounded up and shipped to Stalin's NKVD. Under Operation Keelhaul, 2 million Russians, 1 million Ukrainians in Western Europe were forcibly repatriated into the hands of the Soviet NKVD by British and American forces. Massacres were carried out of hand. Most were massacred immediately. The rest were consigned to slave labor in the Gulag in Siberia. So a whole lot were just shot, and they could literally hear the machine guns going and the people being shot as the British and Americans were driving them across the Danube River at bayonet point, so much so that Russian and Ukrainian women were throwing their babies into the icy rivers of the Danube for them to drown rather than be brought up under atheism. Can you imagine something like that? Nikolai Tolstoy published this on the victims of Yalta, on the betrayal of the Cossacks, amongst many others. "The Ukrainian and Lithuanian armies continued to fight for their freedom and independence for 10 years after the conclusion of World War II. Can you imagine? Till 1955, units of the Ukrainian army were still operating with field artillery, fighting valiantly against Soviet oppression, yet without receiving a bullet, a bandage, any aid from the West. They fought for 10 years after the war was over, waiting, hoping against hope that the West would come and help them somewhere along the line. Some Ukrainians have said to me that they believe the American policy is to fight to the last Ukrainian." I mean, it's a cynical outlook, but I'm afraid it's probably true. "During the Cold War in the 1980s, we knew that we were fighting the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was supplying weapons and training and using the Cubans and Angolian FAPLA forces in Angola. They were their proxies to use against UNITA freedom fighters of Jonas Savimbi in Angola and against the SADF. We knew what we were fighting. We were fighting the Soviet Union. It was their weapons. It was their training. Yes, they were using Cubans and Angolan FAPLA troops, and only occasionally might we see a Russian. But generally speaking, there was no doubt in our mind, in the Southern Defense Force, we were fighting the Soviets. They were just using the Cubans and Angolans as their proxies in a war to advance the cause of the Soviet Union." Now, today, you can go up to Angola and you can see places littered with Soviet BRDMs and all kinds of tanks and armored cars, and just littered with it. And graveyards of tanks, especially on the Lomba River. And you can Google Earth Lomba River, and you can still see the Russian tanks are there, the graveyard, something like 200 destroyed armored cars and tanks around the Lomba River, destroyed by 61 mechanized battalion group primarily, a lot of G5s, G6s, and the armored punch of 61 mechanized battalion group, including our Ulifans, which were involved in some of the biggest tank battles since El Alamein. And yes, also by the Lomba River, you can see some MiGs that are kind of parked off there. Now, in the same way, many Ukrainians and Russians today see the war in Ukraine as actually America and their NATO allies using the Ukrainians as their proxies in the war against Russia. This is what the Soviets did in the 70s and 80s. It's what America and NATO are doing now in the 2000 and 2010s. Ukraine did not ask for this. European nations didn't ask for this. At this time, America and the EU, NATO represent globalism, as seen through the United Nations and NATO and the EU. Russia, which used to be globalist, which used to be our enemies, I mean, I feel strange saying this because most of my life, the Russians were our enemies. But now, Russia's nationalist. And you might wonder, what happened to that red flag with the hammer and sickle? Well, that got thrown out by Yeltsin, and this is 1991, the white, blue, and red of Russia came out. Now, this has been since Peter the Great been their flag, so for over 350 years. The white, blue, and red, and this was first seen in St. Petersburg, used by by Peter the Great. And you can see they've got the St. Andrew's Cross, they've got the St. George's Cross, and they've got the double eagle. Those are often symbols on the Russian flags. St. Michael, who is a patron saint also of, St. George, I should say, who's a patron saint of England as well, is also a patron saint in Russia, as is, St. Andrew as well. Interesting that you can see these symbols today. Even the eagle, the double-headed eagle, is now appearing again in Russia. Now, just a week ago, there was this horrible car bomb murder of Daria Dugin in Russia, in Moscow. She is a war correspondent, journalist, opinion former, but because she's the daughter of a famous Russian philosopher, who's a nationalist, who's an Orthodox Christian, it was assumed that she was collateral damage and the target was actually her father, Alexander Dugin. But in fact, the evidence is not what they were first telling us. She might have been the target. Both her father and her were coming back from a traditional musical festival. It was a musical festival, music and literature festival, the name of which was Tradition. And although the initial Western reports were she is driving in her father's car, that's not true. She's driving in her own SUV. Her father sometimes used the SUV, but it was her SUV. And her father was driving just behind her in another car and saw his daughter's vehicle explode into flames in a car bomb. I mean, imagine that. And this is a turning point in the war. For the Russians, there's every evidence she was actually the target. And they've got the evidence, photographic, of the actual Ukrainian special forces people who are involved in this planting the bombs. And this was televised live. This is a national mourning for someone very beloved in Russia. And it's believed that she was targeted for her views, that she wasn't just collateral damage in an attempt to murder her father. And this is how bad it's gotten. And when the Pope said, it's terrible to see lives being lost on both sides, and he is being attacked, normally not stand up for the Pope, but he's being attacked for suggesting that Ukraine could do something wrong, and how dare they suggest that the loss of Russian lives is equal to the loss of Ukrainian lives. And so the Pope's even being under attack for suggesting that we should mourn the targeting of a civilian in Russia by a terrorist tactic like the car bomb. Now, in a real sense, the conflict is about the globalist World Economic Forum, New World Order, Global Reset, Great Reset, and Russian resistance to the Great Reset. Now, there was a time that Vladimir Putin was one of the totalitarians. He was one of the globalists. He was, in fact, a globalist World Economic Forum young global leader at one time, in the 90s. But times have changed, and he seems to have gone off the plantation, and he's no longer playing the ball that Klaus Schwab wants him to. Now, this is also a battle between paganism and Christianity. The Kiev regime of Volodymyr Zelensky is very liberal, much like its American State Department sponsors. The Ukrainian government is pro-abortion, pro-LGBTQ with a vengeance. And here's Ukrainian police marching in Kiev in support of these LGBT people who know that the EU flag equals LGBTQ and all the rest. In fact, just think of the Commonwealth Games opening ceremony that they had recently in Birmingham, in England. And what on earth is this? Does this not look like a bit of Baal worship right here? Here in England, they bring out this colossal 80-ton metal bull. And there's somebody in front who's waving around some flame, some shard of light or something like that. And these people are bowing down to this bull. And, I mean, look at the people bowing down and all the different types of clothing. And they've even got some kind of clothing that looks like it's not clothing to make it look like naked people dancing around this bull. It really looks like the golden calf type of idea that was so condemned in the book of Genesis, with some woman riding the beast, literally. It just brings back the idea of Moloch worship, Baal worship, sacrificing babies, which of course the West has. They are into killing babies through abortion. And even outside Wall Street, what do we see? A big golden bull. And very appropriate. We've got a lot of paganism coming along in the West. And unfortunately, Ukraine has been following in the West paganist direction, which is why we need to smash cultural Marxism. On the other hand, the Russian government of Vladimir Putin is pro-family. In fact, they hosted a pro-family conference, which they opposed to the Privileges for Perverts agenda. They support of Orthodox Christianity. I mean, this is a very interesting picture. Here's the cabinet room for Vladimir Putin's government. And aside from the Russian flags, they've got an icon of Christ. Now, I'm not into icons of Christ. I'm Protestant. I'm not comfortable with that. I was offered by an Egyptian Coptic priest once a big icon of Christ, and I had to refuse. And he said, why? You like the Passion of the Christ film? I said, yes, why? That's a bit different. I'm Protestant, we can't go for that. So he prevailed me to take a little icon of St. Mark, which we've got in our cabinet over there. Icon of St. Mark, man who planted the church in Egypt, that's fine. But nevertheless, even though this isn't our style, he doesn't have a picture of Vladimir Lenin or Karl Marx there. He's got, or Ham and Sickle. He's got an icon of Christ holding a Bible. So this indicates a dramatic change from atheism to Orthodox Christianity. In fact, Vladimir Putin has a conversion testimony, and his mother was a dedicated Christian, even though his father was a serious Communist Party atheist. It was Vladimir Putin who released the papers documenting Joseph Stalin's orders for the massacring of all the Polish officers and NCOs at the Katyn Forest Massacre. And he's gone to Katyn and laid wreaths in front of the monument to the Polish officers murdered by the Soviet NKVD. He has shown himself on many occasions to be a regular churchgoer. He is an Orthodox Christian in good standing with the Russian Orthodox Church, and has taken part in their kind of baptisms in ice, which is perceived to be something you've got to do. Don't you like that they're cracking the ice to be able to do your baptism? You've got to be fairly serious for that. What's also interesting is while they are putting pagan Moloch-type bulls in Birmingham at the Commonwealth Games Conference, Putin's government has just unveiled a massive new Christian monument of Prince Vladimir, Prince Vladimir, who first began the conversion of the Russians, 988 AD, 988 AD. And so just outside the walls of the Kremlin in Moscow, they've unveiled this very impressive monument and dedicated it to the Lord, this reminder of the man who basically converted Russia and Ukraine to Christianity over 1,000 years ago. And Prince Vladimir is a great hero of the faith. He was baptized. He ordered all of his people to be baptized. And so all the soldiers, all the civilians, all had to be baptized. And this in the Dnieper River. And there's many a celebration, including in comic form, of Vladimir, Prince of Russia, and what he did in bringing the Russians to Christ. And so now, downtown Moscow, they've got this massive monument reminding people of their Christian roots. Hey, this is pretty good. They brought down 22,000 statues of Vladimir Lenin, Marx, and Stalin and Trotsky and all those people, and they're putting up statues to Christian heroes now. That's a testimony. So I think you can see the difference. The West is going back to Baal worship and baby killing through abortion, and Russia's discouraging abortion, going for large families, pushing a family agenda, and building Christian monuments in the old style. This doesn't fit the narrative, so don't expect this on CNN or BBC. The Russian government has hosted an international conference on family and Christian values with 1,000 delegates from 100 countries around the world, hosted in the Kremlin, paid for by the Russian government, promoting pro-family against the LGBTQ agenda. This is why Russia is hated today. Not because they used to be communist, but because they're now more and more Christian. In fact, Russia has the largest number of Christians in all of Europe, followed by Ukraine and Romania. And so it's an intriguing thing to look at the religions in Russia and its playing, even though this is a few years old, this graphic here, it's showing how the Christians outnumber all other religions by far. 67 million Christian members in Russia at the time of this particular survey. While Vladimir Zelensky is hailed as a great hero of democracy in many quarters in the West, his humor and his track record as a comedian is often vile, perverted, and pornographic. I mean, this man is a dark, twisted soul. It's also troubling that Zelensky's banned every political party in his country except his own. There were 12 political parties in his country when he became president. There's now only one. He's banned the other 11. He's closed down every media outlet except his government's own propaganda agency. That's not exactly the way you show yourself to be a Democrat. It's hard to understand how a man who bans free speech, who throws journalists and opposition political leaders into prison, can be lifted up as a paragon of freedom and democracy. And by the way, he's throwing journalists in prison and political opponents before the war began. Amnesty International recently created a massive stir when it published a report on torture and summary killings in eastern Ukraine, Breaking Bodies it was called. And this is documenting how the Ukrainian military has been using human shields, placing their military and their rockets and air defenses and so on inside schools and hospitals in civilian areas, and what they've done to abduct, torture, and kill people in eastern Ukraine for the last 8 years in the war against the Russian-speaking Ukrainians in Donbas and Luhansk regions. Ukraine is also identified as one of the most corrupt countries in the world, certainly the most corrupt country in Europe. Just take John Kerry, who was the Secretary of State in the United States under Obama. Kerry's stepson, Chris Hines, with Hunter Biden, had an equity firm called Rosemont Capital. He did exclusive deals with the same countries that Joe Biden and John Kerry negotiated with. So you had the Secretary of State for America is negotiating in these countries, and his son is snapping up the business deals. What are the odds of four major leaders in America, all liberal, all having their children working for Ukrainian petroleum companies? The Biden-Pelosi family's involvement in corruption is very well documented, but also the Kerry family and also Mitt Romney's family. Biden's son, Romney's son, Pelosi's son, Kerry's son, all on the board of directors for energy companies doing business in Ukraine. What a coincidence. I'm sure there's no conflicts of interest here. And here's an interesting Ben Garrison cartoon of, aha, we caught you. They all got their hands in the cookie jar, Ukrainian cookies, mind you, and in comes Donald Trump, switches on the lights, and they're all accusing him of what they're guilty of. Isn't that just typical? When Vice President, under Obama, Joe Biden boasted he had pressured the Ukrainian government to fire the Attorney General that was attempting to investigate the company his son was involved in. He threatened to withhold $1 billion, that's US dollars, not Zimbabwe dollars, $1 billion in aid until the Attorney General was fired. This was done within a matter of hours. I said, and you can actually Google this, and he actually boasts with a smirk. He's speaking to the Council of Foreign Relations. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. So what's the story? Well, what happened is Hunter Biden was on the board of Burisma Holdings, a Ukrainian natural gas company, meaning petroleum, and the owner was under investigation for allegedly channeling government contracts to his businesses when he's ecology minister. And then this prosecutor general was fired because he wanted to deal with and investigate these crooks here. And his dismissal was demanded by Vice President of America, Joe Biden. Talk about conflicts of interest. And so what you've got is a massive conflict of interest. This is why we say Ukraine's one of the most corrupt countries in the world and certainly the most corrupt in Europe. Hunter Biden earned $156 million from Ukraine corruption. I mean, that's not bad for not doing any work. He's got no skills, no knowledge, no training in any of these fields. But he's getting $156 million for what purpose? Because he's able to speak to his dad who was able to channel billions of dollars of aid to Ukraine, enriching the people that he is in business with. Emails revealed that Hunter Biden tried to cash in big on behalf of the family with a Chinese firm. And, you know, he's written things like how you can invest in me and my family and so on and so forth. And Biden, of course, claimed that he'd never discussed business things with the son. He had no knowledge of this. This was Russian disinformation, and fake news, and, well, now it's all come out that, in fact, the media was covering for them. The media was so concerned to destroy Trump in the run-up to the 2020 elections, they suppressed all this, all these scandals that they knew about at the time, which would have definitely affected the election 2020. And now it's come out that the Federal Bureau of Investigations, the FBI, was interfering in the election to ensure that Trump lost and that Biden won. They literally interfered. And we've got it on no less an authority than even Zuckerberg, who runs Facebook. He said the FBI came to us and said that they've got to suppress this information because Russian disinformation, everything about Hunter Biden's son and Hunter Biden, the son of Joe Biden, and so on. And the graft and the corruption, and they suppressed it long enough for the election to go ahead. And there was no way they would have been voting for Biden if they knew what his son and him were involved in. 2 Peter 2 verse 19 says, while they promised them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. According to a CBS News documentary, of all the billions of dollars of military aid sent to Ukraine, less than 30% actually ends up in the front line of the conflict. So why haven't the other 70%? Most of it disappears and is sold in the illegal arms trade, often find a way to terrorist sponsoring regimes. There's no real oversight. So America is shoveling billions into Ukraine. Ukraine is so corrupt that most of it doesn't even reach the war. It's enriching some of these cabinet ministers and oligarchs in Ukraine, and of course, corrupt people back in America. Much of it's ending up in the hands of the very terrorists one would want to defend against. So here's breaking news from CNN. Zelensky says, please stop saying Ukraine is corrupt. Okay. Say after us, Ukraine is not corrupt. I keep saying it. Right lines in this. Doubtless all of this is to the financial benefit of the government officials of Zelensky, whose personal wealth seems so excessive. Here's a comedian turned president who ran on a ticket of improving relations with Russia, ensuring they didn't have a war in Russia, stopping the war with eastern Ukraine, the secessionists in Donbass region, and to root out corruption. That's what he ran on. And he's done the exact opposite in all of these things. He just bought a house for $32 million in Florida. Ukraine also has the largest numbers of women trafficked into the sex industry worldwide. We know of Ukrainians that ended up in Cape Town, the house of Rasputin. This is open information come out in courts. Places like Mavericks, who advertise on the planes and so on, that they've got trafficked girls from Ukraine. These are things that have come out, even in South African newspapers, exposed by the vice squad in Cape Town. The United States Department of Defense maintains numerous biological warfare laboratories and research facilities in Ukraine where their personnel enjoy diplomatic status where the Ukrainian government has no jurisdiction. Imagine that. You work in a biological warfare laboratory, you get the same status as a diplomat. They can't search you, they can't check anything. You can go in and out the country at will and the local law enforcement has no jurisdiction over you. That's a bit bizarre, isn't it? Few of these laboratories have the required safety criteria to undertake the kind of dangerous research they do. In fact, it's been documented that hundreds of Ukrainians have died of the kind of exotic diseases they're playing in the areas around them. So they've obviously been lab leaks. In June 2022, the Pentagon had to confess to a Senate Oversight Committee that they funded 46 biological research facilities in Ukraine. That's the term they use, biological research facilities, over the last 20 years. This was after revelations by Russia's investigative committee were published, so they had to admit it when it was out and open because Russia overran some of these biological warfare laboratories. And why are Americans having biological warfare laboratories in Ukraine? Well, it's illegal almost anywhere else. They can't do it in America. This is against the Hague Convention, Geneva Convention, all the rest. Interesting, while serving as a senator for Illinois, Barack Hussein Obama, before he became president, helped negotiate a deal to build a biological research laboratory in the Ukrainian city of Odessa, which is one of the places in the battles right now. Metabolita, a company financed by Hunter Biden's Rosemont Seneca partnership, which is in partnership with the Communist Party of China and the People's Liberation Army of China, they were awarded an $18.4 federal contract for DTRA in Ukraine. This is conflict of interest in the higher order. Here's the DTRA operating in Ukraine. The United States of America has provided over $350 million, think what you could do with $350 million, to fund over 1,850 projects for the Science and Technology Center in Ukraine, whose U.S. personnel work under diplomatic cover in Ukraine, running biological warfare laboratories and research facilities. This is certainly an unnecessary war. It was, like many conflicts, avoidable, completely avoidable. From 2008, when American and Ukrainian leaders began speaking publicly of Ukraine joining NATO, the Russian government made very clear this is unacceptable. From 1999, Russian President Vladimir Putin attempted on numerous occasions to have Russia join NATO, but was rebuffed. Therefore, Russia regarded the expansion of NATO eastwards, incorporating what used to be its Warsaw Pact allies of Russia, and even countries which used to be part of the old Soviet Union, as a strategic military threat. Yet the warnings were disregarded. As recently as January of this year, 2022, Vladimir Putin requested an assurance from the American President, Joe Biden, that no American missiles, that no American bases would be placed in Ukraine. Yet Biden refused to give such an assurance. Why would you refuse such an assurance? That could have staved off the war, could have stopped the invasion right there. No bases, no missiles in Ukraine. How easy to avoid the war? Even in February 2022, Putin requested an urgent meeting with Biden to discuss the Ukrainian crisis, and Biden refused. Why would you do that? What was to be harmed? It might have stopped the war. The United States of America and its NATO allies pushed ahead with an integrating of Ukraine into the Western alliance. This has been the political and geographical diplomatic equivalent to the Cuban Missile Crisis. 1962, I don't personally remember it when I was a toddler, but the Cuban Missile Crisis was when the world was the closest to nuclear war before this point. The Soviet Union attempted to establish military bases in Cuba that could actually threaten America. Considering how America responded to the Russians attempting to place missiles and military bases in Cuba in 1962, it should have been obvious that Russia would not be willing to have a similar threat in their own backyard. And in fact, Putin's used that analogy of the Cuban Missile Crisis. It was wrong for us to try to put missiles in Cuba. It's wrong for you to try and put missiles in Ukraine. America's made the Monroe Doctrine a major, major point for a very long time. No trespassing, hands off. No European powers allowed to meddle in American hemisphere. That's South America, Central America, North America, hands off. Well, fair enough. The Americas was their sphere of influence. Well, Russia thinks, well, if you can have a Monroe Doctrine, we can have a Putin Doctrine. And they are trying to say no further in our sphere of influence. Even after Russia launched what it termed its special military operation into Ukraine, President Putin offered a peace proposal that, if accepted, could have ended the war in week one. Well, what was this requirement? Three conditions. Number one, Ukrainian neutrality. Ukraine had to undertake no joining of NATO. Seems to be preferable to what we've got right now. Number two, acknowledgement of Crimea as Russian. And in fact, it is Russian. And number three, recognition of the independence of the two separatist republics of the Donbass region of eastern Ukraine, Luhansk and Donetsk. Luhansk and Donetsk have been separate from Ukraine since 2014. And, in fact, the Ukrainian people have been under attack in Donbass region, Russian-speaking Ukrainian people, for the last 8 years, rocketed, bombed, murdered by Ukrainian forces, and the world didn't seem to be interested in a war on the Ukrainians in eastern Ukraine because they were Russian-speaking Ukrainians, which made them subhuman, not worth protecting. Just like Rhodesians were demonized, South Africans are demonized, South African farmers are demonized. You know, who cares if they get killed because they're racist or something, and therefore they deserve it. And so the Donbass people have been dehumanized and demonized by the world's media, or ignored. Here's Ukrainian forces captured by the Donbass regions. This is in Donetsk, and they're parading some of the Ukrainian soldiers before prisoner swap. And you can see they like their Russian flag in the Donbass region. These are some of the separatists who have had referendums to choose their independence from Ukraine after Ukraine decided to abolish Russian as a minority language. So in their schools, they'd have to learn in the Ukrainian language as a medium of instruction, not in Russian, even though Donbass was 96% Russian-speaking. Now, none of these requirements were radical. They were actually just maintaining the status quo as of February 2022. Crimea has been Russian consistently since it was liberated from the Ottoman Turkish Empire in the late 1700s. This used to be all part of the Turkish Empire. Russia liberated. Crimea has been Russian longer than Alaska or Hawaii has been American. Crimea had only been integrated into Ukraine by the arbitrary decision of the Soviet dictator Nikita Khrushchev, who himself was Ukrainian. So you can see Ukrainian territory in 1654 was quite small. The Russian Tsars added this huge chunk, and then Stalin added that 1939-1945 at the expense of Poland, by the way. And then Lenin added this massive swathe, which included a vast amount of Russians too, into Ukraine. And then Nikita Khrushchev included Crimea in 1954. None of these were preceded by referendums. And so, plainly, Ukraine is a bit of an empire, in a sense, of made up of places where Ukrainian is not the majority language. As the vast majority of the population of Crimea were and are Russian, linguistically and demographically, and as the population overwhelmingly chose to be part of the Russian Federation in a referendum in 2014, Ukraine had no control over Crimea anyway. They never have. And Crimea is very, very serious about Russia. As you can see, they've got their Russian flags up there. Crimea is very enthusiastic about being part of Russia. The separatist republics of Donetsk and Luhansk in the Donbass region of eastern Ukraine have been recognized in the Minsk Agreement of 2014, which the Ukrainian government signed as well, recognizing de facto their rule and a ceasefire. Well, not that they exactly stopped. They've still been subjected to artillery and rocket bombardment by the Ukrainian military with a cost of thousands of lives, well over 10,000. Some people say 14,000 civilians were killed in the Donbass region before this war began. But they were victims of the Ukraine army, so it didn't matter, according to world media. Again, Ukraine had no control of these regions. Donetsk and Luhansk citizens had voted overwhelmingly for secession and independence. After the new Kiev government was installed by violent riots orchestrated by the United States government, the US State Department and CIA, who overthrew the elected government of Ukraine and removed the minority language rights of Russian speakers in Ukraine. Now, here you can see the vast majority of the population on western Ukraine speak Ukraine. The vast majority of people in eastern and southern Ukraine speak Russian. And this is a fact. And so the Ukrainian government that came to power in 2014, sponsored by the American Revolution that they orchestrated, they immediately abolished the language rights of the Russians. Well, what do you think is going to happen? Well, the Russian majority areas are going to have a referendum and decide to secede. That's what. Now, you can view online free the documentary Ukraine on Fire, which gives the historic background to this. And it's striking. It's stunning. I watched one go because they go in there, they show you what happened, how many billions and billions and billions of dollars the American State Department put into suddenly creating radio stations, TV stations, news media, revolutionary things, marketing, right down to organizing the snipers to shoot into the crowd of their own demonstrators that they've done in order to blame it on the government. And hundreds of people died in this. It was brutal. It was savage. And all in order to get rid of the elected government and install their own puppet government. And this was an American-sponsored revolution. And that's not a theory. It's a fact. The evidence is there. And I think anyone who sees the Ukraine on Fire documentary, hearing from people such as the previous president of Ukraine and many others, the evidence is colossal. In fact, it's hardly a sequel. And even the Americans bragging about how they managed to bring this about. Regions in Donbass, which have over 90% Russian speakers, were not willing to have their children educated in any other language than their home language, Russian. And so, you can see the crisis. You've got areas where Ukrainian is the majority, such as in the West, and areas where Ukraine is not the majority, and where Russian tends to be more of the majority in the East. Now, you would hope, at this time of tragic crisis and unnecessary war, that lessons could be learned. Meddling in other countries, sponsoring revolutions, sponsoring coups to topple foreign governments can have catastrophic consequences. I mean, just think how many coup d'etats have been organized all over. And by the way, Bolivia has the world's record. They have had 23 coup attempts and 11 successful coups. Sigh. It's pretty bad. But unfortunately, this is true not only for Ukraine, but also for Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and Syria, which American governments under Barack Hussein Obama in particular meddled with and bombed and interfered with. And you can see the difference between the horrible time of oppression on the left and the wonderful after effects of liberation, democracy coming soon to a country near you. Libya was a very stable country, very high standard of living, bombed into submission by NATO forces. I don't know what was defensive about that. And then you have Syria, which has got the largest percentage of Christians in the Middle East, who have more freedom than any other part of the Middle East, and there is the US government sponsoring ISIS, for goodness sakes. Put money into firing ISIS, and they mobilized ISIS in order to overthrow Assad's government in Syria, which is a secular government that gives freedom of religion to the Christians. This does not make sense. As for Iraq, I think Iraq's going through another revolution right now. Violating agreements, ignoring warnings can be disastrous. Abolishing minority language rights for Russians in Ukraine and refusing requests for autonomy in regions with a Russian majority population was not wise. Continuing to expand NATO and the European Union eastwards despite repeated warnings from Russia was viewed as threatening Russia's strategic security. As Vladimir Putin said, we haven't moved one inch towards the EU and NATO. They have been moving multiple times. Six times they've moved closer to Russia, expanding, taking another 13 countries, many of which used to be part of Russia. The Putin strategy should be compared with the American strategy that America has done the Balkans and other places and similar US actions where they have bombed a lot of countries. As I say, the USA bombing list. And there's a lot of countries that have been bombed. When I've had Americans say to me in public meetings in America, you know why they hate us in the Middle East? It's because we're free. I said, no, they hate you because you're bombing. Stop bombing them. Nobody hates Switzerland. The Swiss are free, but they don't bomb other countries. They send the Red Cross. If you would stop bombing countries and meddling in their countries and organizing coups and revolutions, then maybe you wouldn't have so many enemies. That wasn't very popular because, as you know, every country in the world deserves to be bombed by America. And even conservatives in America, they call them neocons or rhinos. Republicans are name only. Even if they can't find the country on the map, they support bombing it. I was there in 2014, and they were saying to me, don't you agree we should bomb Syria? I said, no. Can you find Syria on a map? No. But you want to bomb it. And these were conservative Christians, by the way. They supported an Obama bombing campaign in Syria. How gullible can you be? But unfortunately, you get conservative America who loathe the bomb and everything you stood for. But if you wanted to bomb some country, they supported it. It's like you're not patriotic, you don't support bombing countries you've never heard of and you can't find the map. This is 1999. This is Serbia. This is bombing of Belgrade. NATO carried out 17,000 bombing sorties against a European city. When you heard just recently of how this is the first war in Europe since 1945. There hasn't been a bombing of any city in Europe since 1945. Well, they've obviously forgotten 1999 when Clinton bombed Belgrade and pounded Serbia. In fact, one of our missionaries was there, Martha McComb. She got bombed by her own air force. She's an American from Texas. She's getting bombed in a church. They were praying, and next thing, the glass windows of the church was showered all over them while they were praying in the middle of the church. One of the American bombers had just come and bombed that area, which included the church where she was working. So, why? To change the newspaper headlines from the scandals about Bill Clinton to something else, a foreign war. What was NATO defending in Afghanistan? And by the way, not only were there all European countries invading Afghanistan, which of course didn't end well, but Ukraine sent forces to this NATO operation, even though they weren't meant to be part of NATO. As for what's been going on, bombing of Libya, didn't do any good either. Something like 7,000 bombing sorties on Libya. Created a tsunami of Muslims pouring into Europe through Italy and so on, which has created a demographic time bomb in Europe as well. So NATO's a defensive alliance, I say. You shouldn't feel threatened by NATO, we're only defensive. Well, that's why they bombed Serbia, invaded Afghanistan, destroyed Libya. Here's some of the statistics. So in Kosovo, which is part of Serbia, 1999, they did 19,000 bombing sorties. Afghanistan, 6,500 bombing sorties. That's just in the year 2001. Libya, just in 2011, they did 9,700 bombing sorties. 45 bombing sorties a day. And Iraq and Syria, 2,796, just in 2015. And Obama got peace prize for that. Number of countries currently being bombed by the US, something like 7. And here's these different presence of America with the amounts of countries they bombed. Notice the crime that obviously Donald Trump is guilty of is he's the only American president since Herbert Hoover, in other words, for 80 years, who hasn't started a new war. So he obviously was committing treason against the military-industrial complex in America, that all these other presidents have all kinds of wars they started, bombing people in faraway places that most of their citizens couldn't find the map. And the American military's got bases all over the place. Russia hasn't got their bases in that many countries. It used to be that Russia had military bases all over Africa, but right now it's America who's all over the place. Proverbs 26, verse 17 says, "He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like he who takes a dog by the ears." You grab a dog by the ears, you could get bitten in the face. Refusing the application by Russia to join NATO was, perhaps in hindsight, not the best policy. Here's George Bush Jr., there's Vladimir Putin, and here we are, 2002, Russian flag next to NATO. They were beginning the first steps towards Russia joining NATO in 2002. What happened? Russia continued to be enthusiastic, but NATO would not accept Russia in as a full member. Why indeed? Why? Imagine having Russia as an ally of NATO. Isolating and enforcing sanctions and threatening Russia not only drove this potential ally away from the West, but forced them to make a deal with China because there's nowhere else they could go. Russia could be a powerful ally to counter the rising threat of Red China, which has got to be one of the greatest threats in the world today. Russia's a major military power. There is no way that Ukraine can beat them. Alienating and demonizing Russia has not improved the security of NATO. Having Russia join NATO could have improved the security of NATO enormously. But American meddling in Ukraine has not improved the lives or security of the Ukrainians. Ukrainians were doing a lot better before this war started, obviously. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps whatever he sows. There's no way that Ukraine can have any realistic chance of defeating the Russian military that's over 10 times larger than their own forces. This is an unwinnable war. And believe it or not, there are American military advisors and NATO advisors talking about we must be prepared for this being a 10 or 20 year war. One of these characters said, we've got to be prepared for this being a 50-year war. Well, if you are a war profiteer in the military-industrial complex, that might seem a good idea. But for the soldiers and the civilians caught in the crossfire, that is not a good idea. You look, the war's only been going 6 months, and Europe is already heading towards a major energy crisis, a very cold winter. Rather than trying to subjugate regions which are historically, demographically, linguistically Russian, rather than trying to ally themselves with NATO, peace will have to be made with Russia sooner or later. There's no way Ukraine can avoid it. Ukraine has a lot of Russians in the population. How do they think they're going to get away without having some parts of them either leave or get autonomy or have peace? Why must tens of thousands more people suffer before the inevitable is acknowledged? Our Lord Jesus taught, for which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it, lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and has not been able to finish. Or what king, going to make war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able to, with 10,000, to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for conditions of peace. So here in Luke 14, our Lord Jesus advises, count the cost. First, if you can avoid war, avoid it. Make peace beforehand. Wouldn't it have been better to have said, we'll be neutral? No, we won't have American missiles in Ukraine. Or even the first week of the war, take the first peace proposal. Okay, we recognize Crimea is Russian, Donetsk and Luhansk is Russian majority. They can have autonomy or independence as they choose. And we will be neutral. Wouldn't that be better? And what's happened now? He has shown you, man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? Micah 6:8. Finally, brethren, pray for us that the word of the Lord may run swiftly and be glorified just as it is with you, and that we may be delivered from unreasonable and wicked men, for not all have faith. So let's pray for the Christians in Russia and in Ukraine. Any questions, comments on the war in Russia and Ukraine?
It doesn't sound like a very good thing when you say Ukraine is the second largest, has got the second largest amount of Christians, and then it's the most corrupt country in Europe.
Yes.
Those two things shouldn't go together.
They shouldn't. But remember, they got a major intervention by a superpower who sponsored a revolution that overthrew the elected government, and have got a very corrupt government. So I don't think the government in Ukraine really represents the people. And it's not like we don't have that in Africa too. For example, there's a lot of Christians in the Congo and in Zimbabwe, but they've got horrible governments. You know, I mean, you know, these things are not, because it's not the government they chose. It's been forced thought from the people. There's 140 million Christians in China. They've got one of the worst governments in the world, but of course there's no democracy there. But yes, I mean, you're quite right. That's a connection you should make. If there's a lot of Christians, why is it corrupt? That's the right question to ask.
Two things. One, an observation. If you go into British newspapers like the Daily Mail or Daily Express UK, you'll find quite a few people see this farcical war, what it is. And then you get others who, you know, they think the Russians are the worst. And, of course, what they do is they arouse the patriotic feelings in the people that, you know, Russians are a big threat to them and, you know, it's all their fault and the Russians kind of thing. And they can't see beyond that. The other thing I just want to ask you, Peter, you know this thing about when they talk about the Great Reset, and they also talk about the thing of this controlled financial collapse, the controlled collapse,
yes,
where after the collapse they build back better, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think about all that? I mean, look, you know, the question is why?
Yes.
Why? It's very obvious this should never have happened. It's doing nobody any good. I mean, the Germans are going to have a terrible winter. I mean, really terrible. And the people of Europe are going to suffer like they've never suffered since perhaps the Second World War kind of thing. So, I mean, there's a big agenda behind this.
I mean, yes. No, I mean, there's no doubt. This goes along with what we dealt with last week about this agricultural suicide to lead to national suicide, the idea of. In fact, French President Macron just said, you've got to say farewell to the time of abundance. We're heading into a time of austerity, and you've got to tighten your belts. And it's going to, well, I don't think he's planning to tighten his belt. It's everyone else's mess. So I'm sure he's still going to be having the caviar and champagne. But the rest of Europe must get used to a lower standard of living. And this is planned. Yes, it's all part of the Green New Deal. It's part of the Great Reset. It's an engineered collapse of the global food supply and everything else. And already, one-fourth of Britain say they will not be turning on their heaters at all in the coming winter because they can't afford it. The cost has skyrocketed.
The Pope, I call him a Marxist Pope, has said, you see, he says that we are entering into the Third World War. Now, all these things, what they're trying to create this massive fear on a number of fronts so that they can herd the sheep exactly as
yes,
they want.
Yes, yes.
But that's what the Pope said. Yeah. We're starting, this is, we're into the Third World War. It's not going to happen, but...
Well, I'm sure they'd like it. Right now, you can see that there's actual plans afoot to get a war between China and Taiwan, which is insane. Do you know how many of our computers and computer programs come from Taiwan? Taiwan is a very important industrial element that affects all of us. But Red China fighting Taiwan, I think the invasion of Ukraine by Russia also showed it's not that easy. And of course, even if you're a superpower, and crossing that, even though it's a fairly narrow waterway, but still, the logistics involved. And Taiwan's got a well-defended island. They've been preparing for this for a very long time. And I think, you just go to... Yeah, I've got some pictures of the Taiwan thing to show in a moment. Taiwan can put up a very stiff resistance. It'll not be a walkover for China. And China may find problems because China's got a massive army, but they're not tested. They haven't had a serious war in a very long time. And so I think the last war they had was a little engagement with Vietnam, and they also had some border clashes with India. And they didn't do too well in those either. So China might have a massive army, but it's one thing to have massive army and a lot of equipment, but it's not tested in battlefield conditions. And they might find this could be turned very badly for them, especially as the economy in China is so bad right now. But still, you've got the American government playing with provoking both the Russian bear and the Chinese dragon at the same time, two nuclear superpowers. What could possibly go wrong? But this may suit the plans of these globalists you're talking about. They want to bring the world's population down. They want to bring everything down. They want a great reset, which needs a great collapse. So this looks like they're certainly getting a great collapse in Europe, which is part of the globalist agenda.
They're feeding the population of this scenario. So-called conservative newspaper that old Putin's not well, he's about to be overthrown, the military don't like him, he can't find any men. Now, they put 150,000 troops into this skirmish, aimed for in terms of what Russia's capable.
Yes.
They're capable of putting millions of men into the field.
They've got 3 million.
Yeah.
That they could deploy.
So they put 150,000. The Ukrainians had an army of about 600,000. They've taken a beating. And then, of course, the Chinese are talking about putting 50,000 troops in. So, really, unless this thing is all theatre, I get this feeling this is theatre that we're looking at, with a cost, of course.
Yeah. The pawns in the chess game are getting hammered. Well, right at the beginning, it's just interesting, a lot of military observers were saying, this is surprising, Putin's not putting his best in. A lot of their best units, their frontline units, are not being deployed in Ukraine. They deployed towards the Europe, Polish and so on borders, and they're not putting their latest tanks in. They're using mostly conscripts, not their professional army. And it was as though this is a training ground, this is the beginning, and he kept his best units in reserve, which is surprising. And, normally you'd send your best in, but Russia's not doing that. All the key units are being kept in reserve, and they are using the conscripts, they're using their older weapons, and a lot of the latest tanks and so on have not even been deployed. So it's like he's prepared for a counterattack from some other sides. And that also fits the threat at the beginning. We've considered all the possibilities. We've made provision. And plainly, Russia has not thrown all in. They're using maybe 10% of the military's capacity, if that.
Okay.
And this means they're waiting for, if somebody else interferes, they aren't too thinly stretched. But what they've done is, whether it was planned or whether it was a secondary plan, by moving on Kiev, all the Ukrainian forces that were gathered around Donbass relocated to protect the capital, and then they took everything in the Donbass and secured the borders of Luhansk and Donetsk. So whether it was the original plan or whether it was a plan B, The fact is they've not got what they said they were going in for, which is securing the eastern regions and protecting Donetsk and Luhansk and Crimea, and then securing, in fact, the land bridge between the areas. Maybe they didn't intend to take Kiev in the first place, but it was designed to pull all the resources to save Kiev. If so, it's not the first time in military history that's been done. It's not a bad idea to force people to redeploy to an area where you don't intend to attack, so that you can then take the place you did want, with less casualties than it would have had to otherwise. So all of the media about this from the BBC, the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, has been so dishonest. If you listen to the BBC and CNN, the Russians have not had a victory, no Ukrainians have been defeated or lost, and you know, you just wonder why Russia hasn't collapsed already. And yet the ruble is stronger than it was at the beginning, the dollar is weak. In fact, it looks like a lot of their predictions have just turned flat all the way along. Yes, Luke.
So has Russia kind of stopped invading? Are they just like sitting where they are and protecting what they've got, those three major things? Or are they continuing the invasion? Because like what you hear in the news is Russia's just going in, taking more land, destroying places. And you get this idea of Russia being exceedingly brutal.
Yes.
Not actually doing what they said they're doing, they're just like almost just sucking up
yes.
more than what they said they were going for. So is that happening or
are they crying? I had a picture here of where it stands, where the military situation is. I had a maybe I've gone up too far now. I had a the military map of what the situation is right now. And you can see that, in fact, it's pretty cohesive. They have gotten what they particularly were after, I think. Where are we? The military situation map. That's not it either. Yes, it's hard to know what exactly is in their mind. I know. Could this be it? I think this is the military. There we go. This is the military on day. Day 103. You can see they've secured pretty seriously Crimea and the whole eastern region. They've got a land bridge between them. So the whole Azov Sea is now a Russian lake. And it looks pretty cohesive. The blue areas where they originally made incursions, and then they fully withdrew from there. So it might have been that original feint from the north was to draw off all the force that the Ukrainian army was overwhelmingly concentrated down in the southeast, threatening those two republics that Russia's got treaties with, which they say is why they're involved. And then it just, once the Ukrainians totally deployed to the north and the center, they withdrew from there totally, and then they all came in on the side. So it might have been a feint. The American view is that the Ukrainian forces defeated the Russian invasion from the north, so that they gave up there, which might be possible, but it seems more likely that that was designed to draw off all those forces by creating a panic. We've got to pull everything in, abandon everything else to save Kiev, and then they were able to then secure what they wanted down with less loss of life than they would have otherwise.
Have you heard much about the so-called counter?
Yes,
because
they're talking about it, but
on the one side, apparently it never got off the ground. And one of the big reasons is the Russians control the skies. You can't have your tanks trundling down the road with only fighter jets, you know, taking them up on the line.
Yes,
and then of course, you know, they're trying to say that. I mean, I listened to some of the comments. I mean, English people saying this is what a bull that they've achieved nothing. So there are people who are seeing wars. But I haven't heard anything where they've made any grounds with a so-called counter-offensive.
About the only ground they've made is where the Russians withdrew. But it looks like they withdrew. They weren't pushed out. They made this huge threat towards Kiev, and they never said, why are they just sitting there? Why are they not coming? Well, you go into the city, you get involved in horrible street fighting, which There's massive amounts of cash.
That was earlier on, but we were talking about they launched a bank that they've been playing this, and it's been, that they were going to launch this massive
counteroffensive.
The Russians out of these provinces, and even going to Russia. Nothing's happened.
Yes, no, well, I can't see that happening either. But it does look that the Russians made this big paint on Kiev, kept the people waiting, and people wondered why they were there for days and weeks without actually entering into the outskirts of Kiev. And then they withdrew. But by then, everything had been redeployed, and no longer was there much of a Ukrainian threat down the southeast, and they were able to completely redeploy. So that does look like a good strategy. As far as the Ukrainian counteroffensive goes, remember, it's probably media theater because they need more billions in aid, they want more weapons. Even if they're not going to use them, they're going to just sell them to somebody in the Middle East and get the money for their entertainment allowance. But there's a lot of corruption theater. And to keep the people interested, you've got to give the impression of there's hope for the Ukrainian military cause. They're going to win. They are winning. The Russians are losing. The Russians are fleeing. And this bolsters the support. So the first casualty in war is truth. And I'm sure there's a lot of exaggeration propaganda in order to keep the money flowing. Because this war has to look sometimes like it's winnable for the people to be willing to invest a few billion more. So I think the Ukrainian counteroffensive is a bit of propaganda. I can't see it going anywhere faster. It's much easier to defend than to attack. Attacking requires doing anything on the move against entrenched opposition is very hard. So for their military to be able to handle a great offensive, I'd be impressed against this kind of opponent that they've got. Any other questions, comments?
There's a comment. I think I'd rather be in Mozambique fighting terrorists than in Russia or Ukraine fighting Christians.
Yes, yes. There's Muslim terrorists threatening Christians in Mozambique. There you're protecting believers from those who are murderers. That's a clear cause. That's a better cause. Yes, indeed. If we had a choice. And I mean, I felt this way looking back at the war. My father and uncles and grandfather were involved in the Second World War and thinking, Christians fighting Christians. I mean, that's just terrible. The only front I thought after a while as I was looking at it was worth being involved in was the Eastern Front, where you're fighting Marxists, communists. I mean, that was a just cause, but to have Christians fighting Christians, I mean, even my dad, who was very, very, very pro the monarchy and British side, he said, you know, the Africa Corps were gentlemen, they were honourable men, and, you know, it's a clean war and there's no atrocities in North Africa, and they had more respect for Erwin Rommel on the other side than they had for their own generals on the side. And so, you know, how terrible to have to fight people that you actually respect. And that's the way it was in some places in the West. Any other comments, observations? Well, I should take one down to point out we've got some upcoming events. This coming Wednesday the 7th of September, we are going to have a home education seminar for high schoolers and parents up here, South African History, and downstairs at the meeting interior, we are having a children's program, parallel children's program. So that's going to focus on some of the great characters of South African history, and that's Wednesday morning. Preparing for Reformation Day this year, we've got, again, an art and essay competition, which will be judged and awards given at the Variety Concert on the 29th of October. Here we'll have our next variety concert. And then on Reformation Day, which this year is a Monday, we'll have a guided tour of the Huguenot Museum and Monuments and a service at 12 noon, Monday the 31st of October. So those are some of the upcoming planned. And on the 29th of October, Saturday the 29th of October, we'll have another home education fair right here in the front garden, with the variety concert afterwards up here with the prizes of the art and essay competition. So that's coming up on Saturday the 29th. Advanced notice, Biblical Worldview Summit coming up 5th to the 12th of January and the Great Commission course following it. So pray for these upcoming events. And we've already got folks from overseas inquiring about the Great Commission course. That's all good to know about and upcoming events that we should be praying for. And as I was mentioning about Taiwan and Russia, one of the problems is while Russia and Ukraine are involved in this war, or should we say, while Russia and NATO are involved in using Ukraine as a proxy in a war against Russia, China might take the opportunity to invade Taiwan. And it's like America decided to provoke at the same time. It's like they want a war on two fronts. And you've got some insane people in the media and government in America saying, yes, America can fight a nuclear war on two fronts. Yes, you can, but there'd be an awful lot of loss of life. Do you know, in a nuclear exchange, they say that probably about 90% of the people in the Northern Hemisphere would die. Not necessarily from the bombs, but there would be so much ash in the atmosphere that the plants would die, that people would starve. The Northern Hemisphere would have massive depopulation if there was even just a partial nuclear exchange in Northern Hemisphere. Fortunately, nobody in the Southern Hemisphere has got nuclear weapons. We're in probably one of the best places in the world to be at a time that people are considering nuclear war. But the insanity of people actively talking about that. Here you've got a nuclear-armed Russia, a nuclear-armed China, and America is busy involved in provoking a war with both simultaneously. You just think, is it possible to be that irresponsible? And these are just some of the consequences that come from rigging an election and putting in a fake government like they've got right now.
Yeah. There's no country on earth that has benefited more from globalization than the Chinese. The whole of the Democratic Party is pro-China.
Mm.
And I would say, if you, and I don't know this is a fact, but I'd love to know where those Russian troops, the other millions that they've got, where they're stationed. You wouldn't be surprised if it's more on the Chinese border.
I've heard that Russia's got more troops stationed on the Chinese border than they have on the Western border. Yes, no, that is, military observers have stated that.
This is where the thing is, you know, it may actually be the case that the United States will hand Taiwan over to the Chinese, because another way to wreck the UK American economy is for all this, what did they make these blooming
microchips?
Yeah,
lots of things
that are absolutely essential for industry.
I think Taiwan has cornered the market on much of the computer industry.
And the biggest prize that these globalists have got is the United States collapsing and then taking over computing. Because Soros has said the biggest impediment to the establishment of the world order is actually America. If they can take America, it's finished.
Yeah. Well, that is the bad part. So Taiwan is very highly motivated. They're a very professional military. Taiwan would be a serious opponent. They might be small compared to Red China, but they've got an island that is very defendable. There's only a few beaches where you can land, and they have seriously defend those. I mean, those would be contested landings. And to get across the strait is quite a serious obstacle, but it's not only that. The Taiwanese know what they're fighting for, and it's likely to be a very serious battle. But China wants Taiwan, but we don't think they're ready for a war just yet. But the problem is there's opposition for Chairman Xi, a lot of opposition to his COVID zero policy. There's protests brewing in China, which is not normal, and that doesn't spell well. There's even opposition within the Communist Party against Xi's COVID zero policy, and people are just sick of it, you can imagine. They're still locking down whole cities of millions of people in China right now. And if we were fed up with it, you can be sure they're fed up with it, because they've locked up in these little cubicles and little high-rise buildings. It's even more unpleasant than for us, a lockdown. So right now, we're facing a very interesting, serious situation. But China can threaten all they like, and it might have a colossal military, but they've still got to cross a serious body of water to get to Taiwan, and Taiwan is very defended. It will be a serious opposition. Because the Taiwanese have nothing to lose. They know that they have to fight for survival. It's not a matter of choice. The question is, would America help Taiwan? America said, yes, no, many a time. It's so ambiguous. I have no idea what they would do, but I wouldn't trust the Biden administration to anything ethical. And this is the problem that comes from having fake elections and a fake president. That's because none of these things would be happening if Trump was in the White House. And that's a fact. He didn't believe in sponsoring the wars overseas. He didn't believe in American force being involved in overseas wars. And he wouldn't have been provoking Russia. He wanted dialogue and friendship with Russia. So, and he wasn't willing to put up with the rubbish from China either. So I think what's going on in the world right now is just another reminder of how meddling causes grief.